The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Harrington on the drive. Harrington forces it up. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. We'll be Zapruder filming the non-foul call last night. Also, the favorites, Gonzaga and Stanford, have their say tonight. And the owner of the New York Mets live tweeting his negotiation with Lindor. Let's go. He's crowdsourcing how much Lindor should get. I mean, what is this? Oh, this is the mess. That's what it is, actually. I just answered my own question.
You don't need a quote from me. I've got steel shots and video from two angles. One kid hits her in the face, and one kid hits her on the elbow.
One girl fouled me in my face, and one girl fouled me on my arm, so.
The bottom line is the officials did what they're going to do. So it is what it is.
Moki, Carrington, and Ariema in order. That's all you need to go here, national panel. Was Baylor hosed on the no foul call? Start with you, Frank Isola.
Well, certainly when you watch the replay of it, there was a foul there, and one should have been called. But guess what? Chino Ariema is right. If you start backing up the game, there are plenty of calls that were missed. And Dejanay Carrington should know something about hard fouls because she was committing them all night. She's a very physical player, and on that final possession, the way that she's dribbling late into the shot clock, she kind of runs into the defenders at the same time. So at live speed, it looks like maybe a no call. Replay, certainly she got fouled.
L. Duncan, is UConn the rightful Final Four participant here, or did Baylor get robbed?
Robbed of what? Robbed of an opportunity to potentially tie or take the lead in the game? Yeah, maybe they got robbed of that, but it just feels like Dejanay Carrington, maybe she went to the well a little bit too much, because on one of those possessions previously where she tried to penetrate, that was a block, and they called it a foul. So maybe it was a little bit of a makeup call, although they could never admit that or they would never work another game again. At the end of the day, we're all just assuming she would have hit those free throws. That is certainly not a guarantee. So this idea that she got robbed or Baylor somehow got robbed, when you decide to put it in the hands of someone else to make a judgment call, you're going to have to live with the results. It wasn't a good play. It should have been drawn up that way. And she just
All right. So that's two now with a very stark view of this. Let me ask again, though, point blank. Was there a foul on the play, Duncan?
Yes.
Okay. I saw it. Was there a foul on the play?
Yeah, there were fouls all over.
Okay. The question is, was there a foul on this play? Woody Page, you can go now.
Yes, there was a foul of the play. We know that. And you're taught, Al, to go in college and pro basketball is make the drive to the basket and put it in the hands of the referee and make them make the call. Well, they just kept, if you look at the play, you see that there's a referee behind her, there's one in front of her, and they both decided to keep doing what they did the entire game, was keep their whistles in their mouth. There was 15 fouls for Connecticut, 15 fouls the other way. So they were calling it about the same throughout the game. You can go back to an earlier play that Frank was referring to, there was an obvious foul. We know this is at a critical time of the game, the most critical time of the game, but I don't think that the referees decided, oh, yeah, we've got a makeup call here or anything of that sort. And so I don't think that there was any case here of robbery. It was a case of you shouldn't have waited until that last moment to go up for a shot. You should have done it early where you might have a second chance.
Sarah Spain, was there a foul in that play? Did Baylor get hosed? Is UConn the rightful Final Four participant here?
There was a foul on the play. To Elle's point, which is different from what he's, yes, you want to drive and draw contact and make them call it. The point is you can't put the game in the hands of a subjective call, particularly a game that for the rest of it was very loosely called. It was a very physical game. You said when we heard all those clips, this is all you need to know. That's all most people are going to look at. But those of us that watch the whole game understand the context within which this was not called. I'm not saying it was a right no call. What I'm saying is if you at the end of a game look at all the different things that could have gone differently and you want to pinpoint that as why you should have won, you're not putting yourself in a position to succeed. There's going to be people who are saying this is to get UConn and Paige Beckers to keep going. There's going to be people who are going to say the ref was out of position and couldn't see that the arms of those players were
not
straight
up. You
believe
that was the case, Sarah Spain?
I do think the ref could have been in better position to see the angle of the arms. I also think, to Elle's point, again, Carrington made a bad choice. That was not the play. That was the player, but not the play. It looked a little like hero ball. It was too late in the clock, and she went up against two defenders, making it a very tough call in the
moment. Frank, I sold the back game.
Yeah, and Carrington was 7 of 22, so she wasn't having a great shooting game. But for me, the ending kind of was appropriate for those last 2-3 minutes of the game. It was a compelling game, but it was not well played in those final couple of minutes. A lot of missed free throws, a lot of bad turnovers. Baylor had their chance. UConn had their chance to ice the game. They kept missing free throws, but that's what made it so compelling at the end. And I think the referees were thinking, you know what? We're not bailing you out on that drive to the basket. Sorry.
It was said earlier this week that this was an Elite Eight game that could have been the national championship game, right? I mean, it's one of those situations, you get a 1-2, but the line between the two is invisible, basically. Let me ask it this way then, L. Duncan. If Dede Richards doesn't get hurt, is Baylor the better team yesterday?
Here we go. Ah, could have shown. I mean, it looked that way, right? Like, they were really dominating UConn, and when she went out, UConn turned around and specifically exploited the area that she's so good at, right? Under the basket. They went on a 19-0 run. So, yeah, we could do this all day. Would have, should have, could have. The girl would have hit her free throws for UConn at the end of the stretch, then, well, the Carrington play doesn't really matter either. How many more times are we going to do that, Tony?
Well, I've got all day, Elle. If you want, if you need to go somewhere, I mean, we could do this for a little bit. You can move on. Sarah Spain, if Dede Richards doesn't get hurt, is Baylor the better team?
It certainly felt like Baylor was asserting their dominance in that stretch of the game. But to assume that Paige Beckers, who seems to know within each game when to turn on the jets, when to facilitate, what the feel of the game requires, to assume that she would just sort of sink because they had fallen behind 8 or 10 points, to me is also is something that we can't sliding doors, which is a reference that I overuse. But whenever we're asked to assume that we know how things would have gone differently, I just use that
Well,
example.
Let's talk about that Paige Beckers revolution, all right? Because there was the buckets in that 19-0 run. There's the patented tap on Gino. And as someone pointed out, Sarah Spade, you said this on Twitter, I loved it. There's the I'd like to tell a story line.
I want to tell a story.
That she gave postgame with Holly Roach. This is incredible for a teenager, for a freshman. What are we watching with Beckers, and what makes her so unique, Woody Page?
Her first name, first of all, I think that's the most important thing. The second thing is that, like all pages in history, she wants to tell stories. We all want to tell stories. What's the third thing? Is she's mature beyond, and you saw that in the interview afterward, she's mature beyond her age. She's been playing in championship games in high school, and now she's on a bigger stage, and she's still doing the same thing she always did. She has such a complete game, and as was said earlier, she knows when to take over a game, when she's needed. She's there for it. And she has an opportunity, I think, here to be the MVP no matter what happens the rest of the tournament. And she would be the first freshman since Breanna Stewart to actually win as a freshman. And Stewart, as we know, Sarah could tell us, went and became MVP for all 4 years that she
All right. Well, that was a transition to Spain. Go ahead, Sarah.
Four letters, S-W-A-G. There are great players in this tournament, and there are other swaggy players, but I do not think anyone can approach the levels of swag that this freshman has. She is already cooler than any of us will ever be in our entire lifetimes at the age of 19, Hello. And that shows up on the court, in the interviews, in social media. It's just incredible. It's that confidence and poise that comes from deep, deep trust in her own decision-making and her
ability. Well, she's built differently, I believe it said. And now the matchup coming forward is against a team that likes to say they're built differently. Arizona, their first Final Four appearance with Ari McDonald, who is carrying Arizona, much like many have carried teams before, and Adia Barnes at the head coach. We're going to have one more discussion from last night. It's more from Kim Mulkey.
They need to dump the COVID testing. Wouldn't it be a shame to keep COVID testing and then you got kids that end up having test positive or something and they don't get to play in a Final Four? So you need to just forget the COVID test and let the four teams that are playing in each Final Four go battle it out.
Despite that prognosis from Mulkey there, the NCAA will proceed with COVID testing. L. Duncan, how did you hear all that?
It was so unnecessary. COVID is not even a storyline. It has affected one game in the men's tournament in the first round. I don't understand why, if it was sour grapes, if she was saying it in jest, it just made absolutely no sense to begin with. And on top of that, if you saw when she first sat down how much she struggled with her face mask, I don't want to hear any protocol advice from someone that can't even navigate a face mask.
Frank Gaisola.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to be working for the CDC, but I do believe, I think a lot of it is sour grapes. She's clearly frustrated after the game. She brought it up on her own. She said, oh, and one other thing, nobody asked her about it. So what she was trying to accomplish there, I have no idea. Maybe tweak the NCAA. That's probably
there's
what
been.
It was.
Yeah, it has to be sour grapes, right? Mulkey's not someone who always thinks before she speaks. If you remember, she said anyone who would be concerned about sending their daughter to Baylor after a massive rape scandal should be knocked in the face for thinking that. She sometimes needs to maybe take a moment to think about what she's saying. I have no idea what her intentions were here, but over 500,000 people have died because of this virus. Basketball does not come first.
Thanks for your thoughts on that. We'll move on. Baylor men, 81. Arkansas, 72. Houston, 67. Oregon State, 61. Talk me through this, Woody Page. Baylor in the Final Four for the first time in 71 years, so none of us have seen that. And Houston there by beating a 15, a 10, 11, and 12, which has never happened before, so none of us have seen it, I can say, with conviction now. Woody, what do you think each run to the Final Four means?
Well, I think in the case of Baylor, that three-week layoff meant so much to that program, both from a negative standpoint and a positive standpoint. I picked them to win it all, and there are only two of us on this panel that did. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I was so impressed with them in 2019, and that's the same team. They're so good defensively, and that's sort of forgotten in all this. I believe that the way that program has come back over the years, that you really put them in a place of saying that they're so determined that they're not going to lose. That was the most important aspect to me of the week.
There's been.
I'm not surprised by the success of the Baylor Gentlemen Bears that we expected right from the regular season. To me, Houston's more interesting to watch because, like you pointed out, the first team ever to beat four double-digit seeds to get here, when they actually face a top team, what does that look like, and does the balloon get popped?
Frank Gaisola.
Yeah, I'm not going to get on Houston. They're just beating the teams that are in front of them. And for them to do that, first of all, the best rebounding team in the country. First time they made the Final Four since, you know, Akeem and Clyde Drexler. But how about Baylor, though? They had four players redshirt on the team come back. So they're bigger, stronger, more experienced. The job that Scott Drew has done building that program, it really is remarkable.
L. Duncan.
When you don't have a dog in the fight, and, well, as a Georgia fan, I've never had a dog in the fight when it comes to the tournament. You go for storylines, and I love Houston's storyline. It's the island of misfit toys. Four of their starters played at other schools, including DeJuan Giroux, who was actually playing in community college just last year. It's really remarkable. Their coach is an island of misfit toy, and Kelvin Sampson, who looked like he got exiled. I love what they're doing. I don't think they have enough offense. They missed 42 shots yesterday, but it's a really fun storyline.
Thanks for your thoughts on that. Sarah Spain, the Gentlemen Bears, I believe is what you called it, right? With Baylor, of course.
Right.
Yes, kind of reminds me of Paddington. We're a big Paddington, the Bear house, the reality household. Paddington 1 and Paddington 2, one of the greatest movies of the last 10 years. We'll be back in Buy or Sell next.
Paddington Station tonight.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HE Travel to save 20%.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, coming to you from the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17.
NFL news today. League and Players Association signing off on the 17-game season. So it's official. 17 games in the season, preseason, reduced by one game to three. Roger Goodell indicating it's a monumental moment in league history when he wrote in a statement, a monumental moment in NFL history. Woody, buy or sell this as being a monumental moment in league history?
No, I'm selling it. A monumental moment was in 1978 when they went from 14 to 16 games. But this is an unbalanced schedule as far as I'm concerned. I don't like it when you're playing more games at home than you are on the road. I just don't think it makes sense. I think there more thought should have gone into it. The players don't like it, but they're just keeping their mouths shut for the most part.
Sarah Spain.
I actually was going to say 1978, yeah, the last time we saw a change in a schedule that has this few games was so long ago. I think it is pretty monumental to add a 17th game, not just because of what it means for scheduling and everything else, but also because what it says about the negotiating of the PA versus the NFL and all the ways that that went the way of the league.
Frank Isola.
At a time where the players are bigger, stronger, they hit harder, I can't believe you're adding another game. I'm all for the added playoff. I love the way that went down this winter. I think they're making a mistake with a 17th.
El Duncan.
I mean, maybe I just have a different definition of what monumental is. Like, monumental to me is when my state finally opens up my age group to the vaccine. Like, that's so
I
dope
agree
to me.
With you. One more
this
game?
Is cool. This is fine, right? Like, I think this is more about guys like Woody. I wasn't alive the last time they expanded the schedule, so this is for guys like him and Frank to be able to talk about the last time they expanded the schedule and the pigeons told them and what that was like and how exciting it was. But, yeah, it's cool.
Okay, one more week of fantasy football, all right? And all the records now, I mean, how do you gauge a 2,000-yard rusher, a 5,000-yard passer with an extra game? Who knows? We're going to move on. Buy or sell two, Justin Fields' pro day today. This was all about his 40, which was blazing fast. 4-4-4, one of the fastest ever. By a quarterback, Mac Jones, pro day number two today. Tossed it around. Some said better. Some said maybe, I don't know. He also caught a pass here at the end for giggles, I guess. Sarah, what do you buy, what do you sell?
Yeah, to me, Fields is much more important. Mac Jones, the questions about him can only be answered in a professional game to see if his lack of athleticism and speed will be a hindrance. So the pro day doesn't mean much to me.
Mm-hmm. Frank Isola on either pro day?
Yeah, poor Justin Fields because everyone starts talking about, well, he's from Ohio State and they haven't had a great run on quarterbacks. But come on, any team worth their salt has game footage of both these players. You really think they're going to judge on what they see today? I'm not buying
it. L. Duncan, take away anything from pro day?
You know, like, sell Mac Jones. After his first pro day, all y'all were talking about was a cornerback, which says plenty. And after his second, all anybody's talking about is Bill Belichick's outfit and whether he's purposely telling Mac Jones to be bad so he can draft him with the Patriots. I don't know why y'all are insisting on making this dude Tom Brady. Sell, sell, sell.
Okay, I think we get what you're putting down there. And Woody Page, how about you? On a year, there is no combine. Is there anything in the pro day?
I'm buying that Justin Fields wants the draft to get here because each week that goes by, he falls another two places in the draft. And the kid doesn't deserve that. He is one of the top three quarterbacks in the draft. And I think he proved that again today. In regard to Mac Jones, he's going to San Francisco. That's who Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch want. So maybe he should make it a best two out of
three. Are you reporting that, Woody Page, or is that your opinion?
Guessing.
That's both.
That's both. Okay, I have to respect that. I mean, you are covering the Denver Broncos, not exactly the San Francisco 49ers, but we'll move on. Buy or sell three, the New York Mets and Francisco Lindor. The trade was completed this winter. Lindor set a deadline to sign long-term by opening day. That's approaching. Mets reported final offer, 10 years, $325 million. Lindor, no. Reported counter, 12 years, $385 million. And on top of all that, Mets owner Steve Cohen back on Twitter saying, what do you think Lindor will accept? I'm crowdsourcing it. Frank Isola, this is your account. Buy or sell.
You know, it's not going to keep me up at night worrying about whether Lindor is going to accept $300 million. Here's the thing. If I'm the Mets, you're making a mistake. All these contracts, Alex Rodriguez, Bryce Harper, position players, investing in them 10, 12 years, big mistake. Big mistake.
L. Duncan, what do you buy? What do you sell from this?
First of all, he's a billionaire. You can't get a verified account, Steve Cohen. Also, that's extremely embarrassing that he's decided to take this publicly. Do not fall victim to this PR machine that convinces you that Frankie Lindor is selfish and greedy because he wants money and Steve Cohen is somehow the victim. The man has more money than some countries.
Woody Page.
Got the answer for you, Steven. Cut the difference. 11 years, $350 million. Let's get this done and move along.
Solutions oriented. Sarah Spain, how about you?
Yeah, the last time I checked on Steve Cohen's Twitter, he was arguing with people about GameStop. So I would say in both cases, not the place for it, Steve. As for Lindor, the Mets are a historic dumpster fire. So I'm going to go ahead and get as much money as possible if you're going to ask me to be there for 12 years.
Tweet the Mets. Tweet the Mets. Step right up, Sarah Spain, Frank Isola, and watch Woody Page, L. Duncan in Showdown. Woody has said he has beaten every Around the Horn panelist ever in Showdown, except for L. Duncan, their first meeting in 2 minutes.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So we've got number ones in action tonight. In March Madness, Stanford versus Louisville, and South Carolina versus Texas. And in gentlemen's basketball playing, Gonzaga, USC, Michigan, UCLA. Woody, who's most rock solid? Who's most vulnerable tonight? What are you watching for?
I want to concentrate on South Carolina. I just think that they've won their last three games by 54 points. I just think there's no chance that they're vulnerable and they're going to win running away.
Louisville's defense is what I'm looking at because we've only seen nine teams hold their opponents to under 55 points per game in the first three games, and six of those teams have won. Tony, defense wins championships.
Okay, but that's Louisville, not even one of the ones I was talking about. Woody, you're the one right here. Point to you. Buffalo Sabres have not won, speaking of won, in 18 straight games. All right, so that's rock bottom. And also rock bottom was Evan Fournier yesterday. Celtics debut, 0 points in 33 minutes. Whose rock bottom was rockiest and bottomest, L. Duncan?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Buffalo Sabres, who are about a game or two away from hanging a sign that says, we participated in the 2020 NHL season.
Mm-hmm, okay.
No, hell, it was 48. I mean, the new kid comes in and goes 0 for 10, but you look at his history. He shoots 46%, and he has been a solid, he will be better.
I do not look at his history because I do not Google Evan Fournier, or just Fournier in general. Woody, I go to you for rock bottom, which is a compliment to you, L, but the point for Woody Page.
It's National Doctor Day, and we want to salute all the doctors, particularly in the last year and a half or so. And I want to specifically name some of my favorite doctors. Dr. Schreiber, my personal physician, but I also want to mention Dr. Pepper, Dr. Strange, Dr. Kimmel, Dr. J, Dr. Dre, and all the other doctors that you have in your life. Go out there, and we want to close with the worst doctor of all. That would be Dr. Elon.
There's a couple other, a lot of TV doctors haven't Dr. been really Strange operating law. That well.
Yeah.
Doc McStuffins, the number one TV doctor though, right?